Welcome to another edition of All Is Right with Rochelle, the Right Now Coach. Today I'm delighted to be talking with Terry Lynch, author of But I Don't Want Elder Care, Helping Your Parents Stay As Strong As They Can, As Long As They Can. Terry Lynch has been advancing the independent living cause since 1977, when he served as assistant to the director of the White House Conference on Individuals with Disabilities. Lynch currently has a speaking and consulting business in Racine, Wisconsin. He also serves as the Wisconsin State Board on Aging and Long-Term Care. Welcome, Terry.
Thanks, Rochelle. Good to be here.
Well, glad to have you. It was so interesting to read about your work in life, and especially how this book emerged from an interesting mix of your professional work with the independent living movement,
right,
and from your personal experience of caring for your mother. Can you talk about kind of those two experiences and how those led you to write this book?
I'd be happy to. My work in advocacy began at the public policy level in Washington, as you mentioned, and after the White House conference, managed the Federal Disability Rights Program that funded state advocacy groups around the country, and learned a lot about discriminatory attitudes and how the system works and how to advocate within the system for the rights of people. In the system, meaning healthcare system or social work, other types of services that people receive when they need assistance in order to get through everyday life. Then my mother started having trouble in her own life with osteoporosis, it turned out to be. So she was breaking bones, and she had a problem with medication, so she was fainting and breaking bones and mm-hmm. starting to lose memory capacity. It was very difficult for her and for me. She was my best friend, so I had her move out to Washington with me, and ultimately I moved back here to start my business. And she was doing relatively independently, and she was doing well and on her own most of the time, but she got badly injured and made it back out of the hospital, but was in a walker for the rest of her life and needed help for the rest of her life. And all of a sudden, I was on the receiving end of the services that I was working on, helping to develop. And then I started to realize that a lot of what was happening to my mother was happening to people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And she became a second-class citizen, and I can talk more about that, but I was learning that she was not perceived as Leila Lynch, which was her name anymore. She was perceived as, and I think you see that in my book, a woman with dementia or an older person whose quality of life was so low it wasn't really worth doing much about.
Mm.
And people started telling me, well-meaning friends were saying to me, you shouldn't really nursemaid your mother, or my favorite in quotes is, she's lived her life, you have to live yours.
Wow.
And so I needed support, and that support came out of the disability rights movement from friends who believed in what I was doing and helped me get the services that we need, and I can talk more about that. But we also got a lot of help from personal care workers and in-home services, and they became our support system. So all of a sudden, the support system that was helping people with disabilities was helping my mother.
Wow.
And her son.
So when in this kind of journey did you decide that it would have been good to have a book on this, so you might as well write one?
I'll confess that it was around 1990, since that's 18 years ago.
Wow, yeah.
The only thing I feel good about when I say that is, well, one of the interesting things is I heard somebody on National Public Radio being interviewed, and they said, well, I started my poetry book in 1952, and this was 3 years ago.
Oh, wow. So they took a while, too.
So I beat that. I started thinking about a book, but I knew I wasn't ready to write it, and it was going to take some time to write it. And I was learning a lot. For instance, the experiences I was having about my mom being perceived as a different kind of person, and it played out in ways that were very distressing and also helped me realize that people needed to know more about this. For instance, she was misdiagnosed as having Alzheimer's disease. She didn't. Because I was plugged into the state aging system and disability system, I called people and said, no, you need a second opinion. And went to a geriatric clinic, got the second opinion. She didn't have Alzheimer's. She had something called multi-infarct dementia, which is relates to small strokes. She was put on a blood thinner. Her memory didn't get worse.
Wow.
She didn't recover her memory, but she no longer had, quote-unquote, Alzheimer's disease. And so I started keeping stories, and I started talking at conferences, doing workshops on these kinds of issues and what it takes to help somebody stay home. Some of the easy ways you can, relatively accessible ways that everybody has to help a parent or oneself stay at home when you start to struggle. And then I started writing articles.
Oh.
And as I wrote articles, two or three of them, not a lot, and developed my seminars, the book idea really started pressing on me every day.
Yeah.
And when my mother died in 1995, I had a good friend say, you're ready for your book, but not quite, because you and your mother were so close, such good friends, that it's not necessarily a typical experience. A lot of people are, but some people love their parents and aren't really close to them. Some people want to do right by their parents and don't like them that much. And there's a variety of situations out there, and I think you should just have those experiences too, which is one of the best pieces of advice ever.
Yeah.
And so I waited a number of years. I worked with other families, helped them through problems, learned from them. I taught continuing education classes and taught the psychology of aging at Parkside as an adjunct professor and got stories that way. And then I was ready to start writing my book, which I worked on for several years. And I had to consult and earn money while I was doing it. Finally, I decided to become a starving artist. And I dropped a couple contracts that I could have gone on with, and I needed to finish my book, and that's how I got it done.
So you actually cut back on your work to do your book.
I did.
So what did that mean in terms of time that you were spending on the book? Were you working a couple days a week?
No, all the time.
Really? Oh, so you were just kind of dumped everything to work on the book.
I worked just enough to earn enough income to get along.
Wow.
And what I learned is if you have a very busy life and you need and you do a lot of things, involved, I do a lot of volunteer work. My consulting took me across disability, aging, and mental health projects. So a very rich and full life, but it left me very fragmented.
Huh.
And what I learned is my book is pretty complicated, although, as you know, I wrote it to be simple. I had to make complex issues as simple as possible.
Yes.
Because I wrote the book for someone under pressure.
Yeah.
As I was. And finally I said, in order to do this, in order to pull this all together, I have to unfragment myself. And that's why it took about a year and a quarter or so to finish it. Then, of course, another year and a half to get it published.
So it took you a year and a quarter to finish it once you actually just stopped working.
That's right.
Well, now, I'm curious. First of all, about that it took a while to write the book, but you were kind of gathering material.
That's right.
All along. So how did you kind of access or make use of all that material when you actually sat down to write the book? Was it overwhelming, or?
What did you just ask?
Well, it seems like you've been kind of preparing to write the book.
Yes.
For a long time with your workshops.
Yes.
And your articles. How did you make use of that material when you wrote the book?
Okay, good question. I decided that I would outline my stories and the issues in different categories that I felt I had to raise, points I had to make, lessons I had to teach people. And it cut across caregiving, medical care, pretty complicated issues like Medicare and Medicaid, which is it's medical assistance for people who basically don't have money and qualify because of disability or frailty. And I had to work those categories into something that was a whole, obviously. So I started out with butcher block, large sheets of paper on a big table at a coffee shop.
Wow.
And so I had scrolls.
Wow.
Somebody says, is that the Dead Sea Scroll? And I said, I hope not. And I hope it doesn't stay Sanskrit. And,
yeah.
And so gradually I organized my ideas off those charts, and I ran them past people. I have a wonderful friend who still is an editor for a major publishing company. And I sent her a few chapters saying, here's where I'm going, here's the outline where I think I should go. And a month later, this wonderful young woman sent me a 6-page memo.
Wow.
And the first sentence was, I read your sample chapters and they're very good. So that gave me the incentive to keep going. Obviously, it was a wonderful thing to hear. But she helped me get organized. And then I also have a friend who writes and teaches, and I used her as a consultant for a while to help me cut through all the deadwood and get to the core of things. But the core of my book is stories.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed about your book that was really interesting to me is that there's this just beautiful mix of personal story and practical advice.
Thanks.
So, you know, you could kind of just read the story
and
enjoy that whole piece, or you could just read the advice, or you could kind of go back and forth. So I'm curious about how you came up with that structure, because it's pretty unusual in this type of a book. So
I came up with that structure, one, because it's quite unusual in this type of book.
Yeah.
A lot of books are good on caregiving and helping older people, your parents. But I couldn't have read any of those books when I was under pressure because they're so dense and they're not story-based, and there's so much information. When people are under severe pressure or even very busy with everyday life, there are a lot of people out there who are helping their parents and raising children. I knew that I had to make it as accessible as possible. And then in my speaking and seminar world, I was making my points that the best way to get points across was with my stories. And I decided to try to write my book as I talk, try to make it as informal and conversational as I could, and make my points with stories, because I would have read stories when I was under pressure with my mother.
Yeah.
As you say, you could read stories maybe and just keep going. And stories make the biggest impression on people. So I tried to write the book as the others are not written, with information that's not painful to access.
Yeah.
And the stories, and then points I make after them. As you see, I have a lot of white space in the book, too.
Yes, that was very helpful, because there's so much information. I think it helps to have that extra space.
And then I had a lot of people read it. I have lots of friends in healthcare, social services, financial planning, and legal assistance, home care, and every one of those people, almost everyone, had an aging parent issue.
Wow.
At the same time. And then I had regular people, quote unquote, read the book. And the criteria involved, is it comprehensive enough, but is it easy to read? Do the stories work?
And so what kind was the feedback that you got from these various people helpful?
Extraordinarily.
So in what way? Were they able to fill in some of your gaps or?
Yeah. There were, well, some of the, for instance, I was able to use a lot of in-home help from wonderful people. My mom didn't want baths from men, so, except she allowed her son to give her baths. So it was, we hired women, and she called them her girls.
Wow.
Well, I was going to tell you something else. Go back to the question a second, would you?
So the question was, how did the people who read your book help you? What kinds of information?
Yeah, okay. So one of the people who helped me runs a home care agency, and I didn't know some of the issues about how you do background checks, because I had very good references. And where do you go for that? How do you do it?
Wow.
What do you access? So I got national websites, state websites, learned about the police department, and technical information I would not have received from anybody. Then I've got some people just came up with words. One of my concepts is preventing and managing problems related to health. Well, one of my friends said, well, you're really talking about overcoming problems related to health issues. Why don't you use that word? And there are words like that or concepts throughout the book. Why don't you talk more about the impact on yourself as a caregiver? You're not telling people enough about that. It sounds like it's too easy for you.
Yeah.
And I said, no, it was really hard. They said, well, you got to let people know that.
Wow. Well, it sounds like getting this advice really made this a better book.
Oh, by far.
Yeah, it's like almost having a community effort involved.
I'm very lucky.
Yeah.
And it comes from all my work on problems related to disability and aging and knowing a lot of people who cared about this, saw it from the same perspective as I did, a human rights issue in a lot of ways.
Yep.
And really liked my mom, put up with me, and wanted to help. And they thought this was going to be an important book.
Yeah.
So they wanted to help me with it. And I engaged as a consultant for a while, sat down with me. And I said, okay, I want to know everything that I've written so far that can go, that I don't need. And so she started telling me, I started slashing it. And she said, aren't you even going to question? I said, no.
So now that's another great hint for writers, because I think that's very hard for writers, especially with the first book, to let go of precious pieces.
That's right.
What would made it possible for you to do that?
I was stuck. She's very smart. I'd worked for a long time on it. She had helped me think about the book well before she started consulting with me. And it was trust in her.
Wow.
As well as my need to help somebody really get me going again.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I determined, Rochelle, at the beginning that I was, when I asked people for help, I was really going to take their comments seriously and never get upset. And never say, but wait. Sometimes I would, but it would be challenging an idea or asking, well, isn't it really this rather than, and we had those kinds of discussions. But and people did say, you're not very defensive about this. I said, I want to end up with a book that people are going to read and like, and you're telling me what you want to read because I'm writing it for you.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's good, and that seems to be kind of the core of what getting good feedback and be able to receive it is realizing that the goal of the two people is the same. It's getting a good product.
Sometimes it's painful.
Well, it is. Yes. But it sounds like you're able to keep the goal in mind, that you wanted this great...
This paragraph doesn't make any sense, and plus I think it's just dead wrong.
Like,
what do you mean?
Oh my gosh, I just gave up my job for a year.
No.
Well, one of the things I found interesting on your website is that you talked about your core message of the book being keep on going.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering about how that core message helped you in those kind of difficult times when you're thinking, oh, this is awful. How did that help you keep going in writing the book?
Well, it helped me keep going in perhaps a little different way than you're thinking about. It helped me keep going because what is missing in the world of long-term care and advocacy for people, in a lot of instances, the other books and other approaches sometimes lose track of the sight of what you're really trying to do, which is to keep the person going. And I realized that the heart of what I was doing, it was assisted living, helping my mom get in-home help, helping her get medical care, getting a wheelchair, setting up the stairs so she could walk up them. None of that mattered unless my mother still had the spirit and energy and determination to keep going. They all helped her do that. But this gets lost, Rochelle, in the service system. And a lot of this came out of my experience in disability rights, where you put the person first.
Yeah.
Then look at how you build a world around them.
Yeah.
Help them build their own world out of something that perhaps most people couldn't see, but skilled professionals are supposed to do that. But too often it turns out to be, well, you need a bath. And here's a way that you can get a ride somewhere, but it's fragmented, and ultimately, are you really helping the person live a full, rich life? So I decided I had to get that message out there. And then, as you know, I have 8 rules, such as never accept old as the explanation for anything, and rehabilitation is not only for the young.
Yeah, and I love that.
I had to get those out there.
Yeah.
So keep the flame burning was the core message, and I think you're right. It did keep my flame burning, but by and large, I heard my mother talking to me, saying, "This is great. We're doing this together." I don't literally mean I heard her talking to me, but she was a passionate person. She thought I was doing good work when she was alive, and she was upbeat, and she always told me, if my story is going to help people, let's do it. Get it out there. Talk about my life.
So it sounds like you had a mission kind of beyond just the book. There was a purpose to this, and that kind of helped you keep at it
Right. It's a writers don't, a lot of writers such as myself, ultimately don't write books to make a lot of money because you spend so much time and uncompensated hours writing it.
Yeah.
Then authors might not get a lot of compensation out of the publication process. You hope you sell quite a few books. And then you want to do public speaking and consulting. But the reason I spent so much time on it was to accomplish what you've seen and what we're talking about, a book that people will read that perhaps will be life-transforming.
Yeah.
And Rochelle, it's interesting that the kinds of things that I know about are out there in the media, quite a bit of it. Like, there's ways to stay at home that don't have to be expensive, or a lot of people are assessed with Alzheimer's disease who don't have it.
Yeah.
And I just saw that these messages aren't really getting to people very well. And so I had to do it. And I had a couple friends who were saying, "So are you going to do this before you die?" And I said, if I should happen to die, you're doing this posthumously for me.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, you said it took you a while to get this published. I'm wondering how this whole relationship with the Legal Center for People with Disabilities and Older People came about and how they ended up publishing the book.
Good question. The Legal Center of Denver is a statewide advocacy organization for people with disabilities and older people. And that program was one of the state programs started around the country by the disability rights program I managed in Washington.
Mm.
And I was the contact person, and I was the person who fought for increased appropriations for them and getting them discretionary grants. And so I developed some really close friendships. And some of the directors of those programs, including in Wisconsin, remained in their jobs since the early 80s.
Wow.
In Colorado, Marianne Harvey is the director of the Legal Center, and I've been friends for a long time. I asked her to review my book, give me some ideas, and I sent her a copy of the book, manuscript, and about a week later she said, "Some of us have looked at your book. We like it. There are a lot of ideas we have for changing it, but how do you feel about us publishing it? Because it helps advance our mission of empowering people, helping them manage the healthcare system, helping them stay at home, or if they don't stay at home, remain empowered when they go into other residential settings." And this is a book that we think can really help us advance our mission, and would you like to have us do it? And as you read, I think in my author's note, I said in my most professional manner, "Are you serious?"
Yeah.
And so we developed a partnership built around values.
Wow.
And they had published some really good books in the area, for instance, special education advocacy that they published for families and school systems would buy them. They'd never done what you call a trade paperback, which goes, we hope, circulates in the retail market as well. But they'd had excellent experience with book designers, including cover design.
Yeah.
They knew enough about what they were doing that it wasn't both of us just stumbling in this together. And the great thing about it is, I had a lot of input on book design and a lot of other issues that many authors don't have.
Yeah.
So it's really an ad. They, the great thing is, and this has given me some access to, for instance, policymakers.
Yeah.
Now, Senator Chris Dodd endorsed my book, as you saw on the back.
Yeah, that's amazing.
One of the reasons is that this book, the proceeds from the book, either go to a starving artist or to a publicly funded group that puts the money back into action for on behalf of older people and people with disabilities. So that's unique also, and that's a wonderful outcome for me. A lot of my friends say, that's perfect for you, and I say thank you, and I think that's right.
So the money's split between you and the center.
Basically, I have a much better situation with them than a lot of authors have.
Wow.
Because it's a higher percentage for me, and they're very generous that way. But one of the things I've learned about publishing, and it's true here too, although they're good at helping you market the book, at marketing the book themselves, authors have a major responsibility for marketing.
Yeah.
So I'm spending quite a bit of money on marketing. Also, so the money proceeds from the book maybe help me market as much as anything.
Well, what a fascinating story, and it really just teaches writers to be creative in the way they think about their relationships and connections, because, you know, who would imagine that a legal center would be publishing a book? But here you have this great relationship.
Yeah, well, one of the things is think about your contacts.
Yeah.
And if you have somebody, first of all, if you're an issue-related writer and you're passionate about it, that passion has to come through.
Yeah.
And it's not something you say, I think this is important. You say, for me, I was just saying, this has to get out there.
Yeah.
And I have to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that helps also when you approach a publisher and they know that you're going to work really hard to get this message out, and that includes getting the book to sell.
Well, do you have a final tip you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Keep the flame burning.
Okay.
When I was looking at what I had learned, the core lesson, I don't know if it's a tip, but I think it could qualify that way too. What is my core lesson? The most important resource that we have going for us, there are exceptions. Some people have Alzheimer's disease and other unfortunate experiences where they can't really focus on managing their lives anymore. But so many people can, who lose the opportunity to remain in control of their lives just because they and people who love them don't know what they can do. So as I was looking through all this, I just said to myself, okay, ultimately what people have to know is the most important resource is the power of the human spirit. If you can keep a person's spirit alive, you can accomplish remarkable things. And that includes the spirit of caregivers. So as you know, in my book, I focus on that too. So the tip is always focus on, as much as you can, not on what you think is, not on your own interests or what you think is best for a parent, without looking at how they want to live their lives. And if you make a step that erodes the motivation that your parents have to keep going, you've got to reassess that step.
Mm.
And that's one of the things that's happened with my book. People will come in and say, I wrote my book, a lot of it, in a coffee shop. A lot of people have bought my book from me in a coffee shop.
Wow.
And a couple have come in and say, well, after I read your first two chapters, we decided not to try to push our mother into a assisted living home. Not that they shouldn't when the time comes, but I said, so why did you do that? They said, well, keep the flame burning. She'd be happier at home. When I hear comments like that, it's worth all the time I spend on the book.
Wow.
One other thing, when people go from hospitals to nursing homes, a lot of times they never come back again because they don't get the support they need to get out. And I focus on strategies for helping people return to their homes. And that's one of the things that people need to do, is not assume that it's inevitable that someone goes in with a hip fracture and isn't responding very well is going to have to stay there. And just always keep fighting.
That's great. Well, an old is not an excuse. I love that. I hear that so many times from clients. Oh, I'm too old to write a book. Oh, I'm too old to do this. Oh, I'm too old to exercise.
Oh, yeah. What happens, Rochelle, is that as we age, even we have discriminatory views of ourselves.
Yep.
or negative views of ourselves. I've done a lot of research on aging as I go along here, and this is a real shocker, I know. People who believe they're not going to do well in old age, guess what?
They don't.
Right. Wow. The glass half full. People with positive attitudes about where they're going, who stay engaged, keep going. I'm not going to stop doing this because I'm 75. I'm not going to stop when I'm 80. I'll let you know when I have to stop. But it's not now, Sonny.
Oh, that's great. Well, Terry, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I've been excited to talk to you, and I appreciate it very much.
No problem. This has been another edition of Always Right with Rochelle, the Right Now Coach. You can find a link to Terry's website and his book at my website, rightnowcoach.com. Thanks for tuning in, and remember to always write.